High Bridge Audio presents Running the Rift by Naomi Ben-Aaron. Read for you by Marcel Davis. Text copyright 2011 by Naomi Ben-Aaron. Production copyright 2011 by High Bridge Audio. A genocide is a poisonous bush that grows not from two or three roots, but from a whole tangle that has molded underground without anyone noticing. Claudine, Genocide Survivor, from Life Laid Bare, by Jean Hatzfeld. Book 1. Ijo Hashize, Yesterday. Izina ni Rio Muntu. The name is the very man named. 1984. 1. Jean-Patrick was already awake, listening to the storm, when Papa opened the door and stood by the side of the bed. Rain hissed at the windows and roared against the corrugated roof, and Jean-Patrick huddled closer to his brother Roger for warmth. He remembered then that Papa was going to a conference in Kigali. He said it was a very important meeting. Educators from all across Rwanda would be there.
"I'm leaving now," Papa whispered,
his voice barely louder than the rain.
"Uimana will be here soon to pick me up."
If even Headmaster was going, Jean-Patrick thought, the conference must be top level. The lantern flame glinted on Papa's glasses and on a triangle of white shirt. The storm must have knocked the power out, as usual.
"You boys will have to check the pin carefully after you bring the kettle in. Make sure no earth has washed away in the rain."
He tucked the blanket around their shoulders.
"And Roger, you'll have to check Jean-Patrick's lessons. I don't want any mistakes from either of you."
Turning his head from the light, Jean-Patrick puckered his face. He didn't need Roger to check his homework. Even Papa had to look hard to find an error.
"I'll be back tomorrow night," Papa said.
Jean-Patrick leaned on his elbows and watched his father walk into the hallway on a beam of yellow light. His footsteps echoed on the concrete.
"Be safe, Daddy," he said. "May Imana bless your journey."
Gachagoro, the rainy season of November and December, often turned the roads leading from Changugu into muddy swamps. On the path, Jean-Patrick sometimes sank in mud to his ankles. All day the rain continued. Streams swelled and tumbled toward Lake Kivu. Rivers of red clay washed down from the hills, and by the time Jean-Patrick came home from school, mud had stained his pant legs the color of rust. After he finished his homework, Jean-Patrick brought out his toy truck and steered it back and forth in the front room. His father had made the imodoka from coat hangers, scraps of wood and metal, and brightly colored bits of plastic. Roger had a new watch, a gift from a Mzungu missionary. He kept setting and resetting the alarm, beeping it in Jean-Patrick's ear. The bell for the end of classes rang at Gihundwe, their father's school, and the students' voices bounced between the buildings, a river of sound muffled by the rain. Jean-Patrick imagined the day he would leave primary school behind and be one of them, adding his uproar to the rest. Sometimes the anticipation bordered on fever, a feeling that slowed the passage of time down to the very tick of the clock.
"We better get the cattle," Roger said. "If we wait for the storm to end, we will be here, waiting when Daddy comes home."
They put on their raincoats and rubber boots and took their switches from the side of the house.
"Let's race," Jean-Patrick said, taking off before Roger had a chance to respond.
The competition between Jean-Patrick and Roger began this year, when Roger started playing football on the weekends with a small club called Inzuki, the Bees. He ran whenever he could to keep in top shape, and often he took Jean-Patrick with him. He had taught Jean-Patrick how to run backward, how to pump his arms, and have a good, strong kick behind him. Since they lived at the school, Papa kept the cattle with a cousin of Mama's who lived near. Jean-Patrick ran, keeping to the side of the road where the mud was not so churned. Each day, he tried to make it a little farther before Roger caught him, but today was impossible. No matter what line he chose,
The road swallowed his boots. Roger passed him before the red bricks of Gihundwe's walls were lost to the mist. From a distance, Jean-Patrick spotted the wide arc of horns on the Inyambo steer, their father's favorite. In the blur of rain, the horns dipped and turned above the small herd like the arms of an Entore dancer. The steer looked up, blinking his liquid black eyes as they approached. Jean-Patrick placed a hand on the steer's back and felt the wet quiver of his hide. Led by the Inyambo steer, the herd shuffled into motion toward the rickety collection of poles that marked the pen. Roger made it to the gate at Gihundwe, a good 10 steps in front of Jean-Patrick. He stopped and took off his watch.
"Look, it took us 27 minutes and 35 seconds there and back. I timed it."
Jean-Patrick gasped for air. Mud clung to his clothes, his boots, his hands.
"You lie. No watch can time us. Let me have it."
He took the watch, and there was the time in bold numbers, just as Roger had claimed. The smells of stewing meat, peppery and rich, came from the charcoal stove in the cookhouse. Jean-Patrick and Roger stripped off their boots and raincoats and went inside. In the kitchen, a snappy soukous tune by Peppa Kali played on the radio. Jean-Patrick's little sister did some kwasa-kwasa steps with Zachary in her arms. His legs dangled to her knees.
"Hey, hey, Jacqueline, you dance sweet,"
Jean-Patrick teased. Jacqueline spun around.
"Hey, what happened to you? Did you drown?"
She pointed to the dirty water that pooled by Jean-Patrick and Roger's feet. Roger took Zachary from Jacqueline, and the three of them danced. Jean-Patrick swung his hips the way he had seen on the videos. He was still swinging them when he heard the knock at the door, quiet at first and then louder, and still when he opened the door to two policemen. Mama ran into the room, baby Clemence bundled at her back.
"We're so sorry to bring you this news," they said.
Mama brought them tea, her back straight and tall. Clemence began to whimper, and Mama picked her up to comfort her. Zachary played with the truck on the floor as if the only difference between this afternoon and any other was that men had come to visit. There were 6 of them traveling together, the policeman said, all headmasters and préfet. The Urubaho was out of control, they always were, going too fast down the mountain with a load far too heavy for such a flimsy truck. It swerved around the corner on the wrong side and crashed head-on into the car. 2 people dead from Gihundwe. Jean-Patrick's father and the préfet de discipline. 2 others dead and 2 badly injured. It was a miracle anyone survived, and the Urubaho driver, with barely a scratch, obviously drunk. He hit a boy on a bicycle, too. The sack of potatoes he carried on the handlebars scattered across the road. The bicycle was found, but not the boy. The cliffs, too steep and dangerous to search in the rain. The policemen clucked their tongues. It was always the best of the country, Rwanda's future, that died like this. The body was in the hospital at Gitarama. With their permission, the headmaster from Gihundwe would bring him home. Mama stopped her gentle rocking.
"Uimana wasn't in the car?"
It was one of those strange occurrences, the policeman said, that revealed Ihiganza Chimana, the hand of God. At the last possible minute, there had been an emergency at school, and headmaster had stayed behind.
"Uimana asked us to fetch his wife from the Centre de Santé as soon as she finishes with her patients."
"Angelique,"
Mama said. The name came out as a long, trembled sigh.
"Yes, I will be glad to see her."
The policeman rose.
"We knew your husband. A good, good man. Thank you for the tea."
After they left, Mama stared so hard out the window that Jean-Patrick looked to see if someone stood there in the storm. He half believed that if he closed his eyes hard enough, he could blink the afternoon away, look up, and find Daddy there, returned from his trip, pockets full of cookies as they always were. Mama knelt by him.
"Don't worry. Uncle Emmanuel will be a father to you now."
"I hate Uncle Emmanuel," Jean-Patrick said. "He's stupid.
and he always stinks of fish.
The sting of Mama's slap made his eyes water.
Be respectful of my brother. He's your elder.
Jean-Patrick couldn't hold it back any longer. He wailed. Mama drew him close.
We have to be strong, she said. Think of your namesake, in Cuba. You must be as brave as the god of thunder.
The door opened, and Angelique came in, still in her white doctor's coat. Mama collapsed into her arms.